Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Robert Neville Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia. It's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and this week's special guest co-host, Phyllis Floyd.
Hiya.
Tonight's topic, Panic in the Year Zero. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the old podcast. Post-apocalyptic night here with Panic in the Year Zero. Great film we'll get into in just a few minutes. Hey, first off, I want to thank everybody for coming out to Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion the other night, where we got back into some cool and odd horror films with 1974's Deranged, pretty much the Ed Gein story, and Scanners, which I haven't seen before and always wanted to, and man, it's got some great effects in it. Good turnout, good films, a lot of fun, and as always, Phantasmo After Dark. Phantasmo After Dark, that's what you're listening to now. Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion is free. Cult movies up on the big screen over in Chesapeake at the Public Library. Check us out on Facebook for that, more info. And Phantasmo After Dark is always free, too, right here. And whether you listen to us on Podbean or iTunes, and we're soon to get into, what's that other one we're going to get into?
Stitcher,
which is apparently another streaming service for podcasts and such. So, hey, we'll be on that pretty soon. Now, coming up in October, we're going to have the big Monster Fest one-day horror con that we put on. And it's a lot of fun, and it is free at the Chesapeake Central Library once again. We've got over 60 tables full of dealers. We're going to have some special guests that we'll get into here soon. Check out the Facebook page and the Monster Fest website. Was it monsterfestva.com?
Yep, that's it.
That's it. And for all updated current info on that. And also, this year is Dr. Madblood's 40th anniversary, and we're going to be celebrating that at Monster Fest and have some special stuff going on there. So check it out and join us, won't you? All right. I think that's about it for upcoming things, at least. That's all I can remember what's going on. We might be doing some other things with Phantasmo in October at around town, so keep checking us out on the Facebook page for that. And, hey, if you want to get in touch with us about the podcast here, you can do it a couple different ways. Of course, the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page, and we also have an email. It's phantasmoad@gmail.com. Thank you. That's phantasmode@gmail.com. And drop us a line. You know, let us know if you like what we're doing, if you want us to talk about something else, or if you want us to shut the hell up. You know, anything. You know, just let us know somebody's out there. It's lonely in the lounge sometimes. Now, Panic in the Year Zero. Underrated film. Great post-apocalyptic film. Not over the top. Not a huge film. 1962. Starring Ray Milland, Gene Hagen from Singing in the Rain, and Frankie Avalon, Mary Mitchell, directed by Ray Milland, which is kind of cool, and has this awesome jazz soundtrack by Les Baxter, which is one of the coolest things about the movie. Les Baxter, who also scored some of the Corman Poe films, and oddly enough, some of the Frankie and Annette Beach Blanket movies. But the score is great. It kind of is counter to what's going on in the film, which is, it's not really a happy film. It's pretty serious the whole time.
But the music doesn't, yeah, it doesn't really go.
No, but it doesn't.
I mean, it's great, but yeah. It almost doesn't go with what's happening. It seems too happy, too up.
It's swinging jazz. But it really, it doesn't play throughout the film, though. It's really, right? And it mostly just at the beginning and the end?
Yeah, but I mean, there's still music in between. It's just, I don't know, maybe it's just not as jazzy as the rest of it.
Yeah.
It does kind of, I mean, it's not like it stands out in your head and just takes you away from the movie, but yeah. Once in a while it will.
Now, this film is was made in 1962, a James H. Nicholson, Samuel Z. Arkoff production. And it was made in 62 and does take place in 62. And you've got the typical 50s family, because the 50s weren't over really, or the 60s didn't really start till the Beatles came in 64. So you got the tail end of the 50s dragging into the 60s, and you got the typical 50s dad in his sport coat with his, you know, he always wore a hat back then if you were a man. Kids didn't wear hats, but men had to wear hats everywhere they went, which is cool. We need to bring that back. And the family getting ready to go on vacation, and they're up at 4 in the morning packing the trailer, and they're leaving Los Angeles to go out camping. And they get down the road a little ways, and what is it? Don't they hear the explosion?
They do. They hear something, and they aren't sure exactly what it is. And they say, you know, let's drive on up a little ways, and we'll ask somebody at the next stop. So they drive up to a little, what is it? It's not a gas station. I guess the next stop is a little breakfast diner or something.
I can't remember if they do that or the gas station first. But anyway, I know that at one point, I think they stopped to use the phone to try to call her mother or something because they can't get anything on the radio. And they look back the way they came and they see the mushroom cloud. Now, here's where it gets dumb for just a minute.
When I see a mushroom cloud, I'm going to run straight to it.
And that's what they do. They're worried about the wife's mother or whatever, and they don't know what's going on. So they turn around and go back towards the mushroom cloud to find out what's going on. Meanwhile, all these other cars are racing down the road, coming at them, getting away from it. That's a clue. I would, you know, follow those other cars. But they decide to turn around again at one point and just go, right? I can't remember exactly when.
Yeah, I think they end up stopping somewhere. I forget. They stop a few times, and I can't remember which one is which, but they stop somewhere, and then the guy starts telling them, you know, well everything's all closed off, right? Everything's all closed off, and you should turn around and get as far away from here as you can and stock up on foods and staples.
And one time they stop for gas, and in an uncredited role is Paul Gleason, the vice principal from Breakfast Club. Dick, if you will. this is really a cool little film. You see, over the course of the film, Ray Milland, like I say, is the typical 50s dad, you know, upstanding guy, do what's right, and how he, you know, to take care of his family, he becomes harder as it goes on, but still fair.
Yeah.
He's still a fair man. But they stop for supplies, and he pays for all the groceries, what, about $100 or $200
it's
worth of groceries?
It's almost $200 worth of groceries, yeah.
And then he has the guy call the
hardware store
guy to open up, because it's still early in the morning. And they go in there, and they get supplies, and they buy some guns, and he only has like $100 left on him. He's going to write the guy a check, and the guy won't take a check. Or it has to clear. We wait 2 days on guns for the check to clear. Yeah. So he says, well, you can take all the other stuff, but I keep the guns. So he ends up having one of the loaded guns, and he tries to just take them from the guy, and they end up scuffling, and Frankie Avalon comes in there and picks up the gun, and is Ray Milland's son. And as they're leaving, he says, I'm going to write you an OOU. I will pay you for this.
Yeah,
you
know, he even tries determined. To give him like his wallet with his ID and his bank information or whatever is in there.
Even though he's trying to protect his family and just doing what he's got to have these supplies to do it, he's still... And you get the sense that he is going to make good on it, because that's just the way people were back then, you know.
Or at least he was.
Yeah, and he's that kind of guy. Now, the wife the whole time, though, just doesn't get it or doesn't want to understand the seriousness of the situation they're in.
Well, it's weird because at the very beginning, she starts out, you know, they get in the car and they're driving off. And I can't remember what he says, but she makes some kind of, you know, funny little almost sexual joke towards him, remember?
Oh, yeah, a little playful banter.
They've got a real playful, you know, husband-wife banter. The kids have fallen asleep in the back of the car, and their relationship is clearly a good one, and they are just, you know, having a good time on the road. And as the movie goes on, you know, she is clearly a pacifist. She doesn't think there should be any violence. She doesn't want anyone to
Ray Milland, you know, as the husband and the father of the family, he recognizes the seriousness and immediately about what's going on and understands what's gonna happen, how people are gonna react and act, and what they have to do to survive. And she just doesn't understand it, or like I said, doesn't want to think things are going to get that bad and people are going to be that bad.
Yeah, she's of the mind that there's always going to be law, there's always going to be civilization, you know, we're going to be a part of it. We have to maintain our moral standing and all these types of things, where he is he says something along the lines of civilization's going to return, and when it does, I want it to be us that starts it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and
so
then
he realizes that he's got to make some moral compromises in order to protect his family.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the one scene that kind of sells it and drives that point is where they're stopped on the side of the road, and those young ruffians, or either they kind of run them off the road.
Right.
And they back up, and the family is in the trailer at this point, and Ray Milland's the only one driving the car, and he gets out. I think one of the kids has a gun, and they, you know, take his, and they've got him leaning over the car, and they're taking his wallet and taking his money, and they're asking him, well, what's in the trailer, and he says nothing, and they're getting ready, you know, they're going to shoot him and take his stuff,
right?
Basically, and he told his son, you know, you go in there and you know, back me up, and if you see anything, mm-hmm. you know, shoot.
Well, he tells him shoot, but don't be trigger happy, but shoot if you need to.
Yeah, and so when the guy's getting ready to kill his dad, then he shoots him with a shotgun, I guess buckshot. You know, hits him in the shoulder, doesn't kill him,
right?
But you know, he drops his gun and they go away because he's got a gun pointed on him. And the kids, you know, they take off in the car, and the family comes out, and the mother is, he congratulates him. Good job, son. You know, thanks for looking out. And the mother's like, my God, he shot somebody, and he didn't have to do that. And he's like, would you rather the other guy have shot me? He was going to shoot and kill me. You didn't see that part of it? It's like what he's saying to her. And you know, I mean, he was going to kill him, and the son protected his dad, and that's what you know, the situation's only going to get worse, and she doesn't want to understand that.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, they had also alluded to, you know, who's in the trailer, thinking maybe there were women there, and
oh, yeah.
And, you know, he even says to her, would you rather have shot me, killed me, and I don't think he said raped
no,
you.
No, they don't.
They never say rape.
Yeah.
They say take advantage of or
yeah,
abuse
they skirt,
or something
they never
like
say
that.
The word, and you never actually see anything going down or happening.
Right.
But later in the film, once they get to where they were going to camp, and they've blocked off the road, and Ray Milland does a couple of things to get his, the way they get across the highway is like, holy crap. It's pretty cool. You have to see it. I don't want to spoil it because it is a neat scene. And then they have to go across a little bridge to get, once they get toward in the campground area, and they tear the bridge down from the other side and kind of block themselves off from society and to be safe. But at some point they find out that over the hill and down a ways, about a mile or two away, is a cabin or a house. And wouldn't you know it, that's where those young toughs are. They're in that house. And you find out that it's not their house, that they have taken over the house, and there's a young girl that lives there, a teenage girl that, and these guys have killed her parents, and they never say it, but you see her disheveled and in a slipping bed, and in a double bed, and there's an empty space beside her. They've been using her and taking advantage of her, and raping her, pretty much, since they killed her parents.
Right.
But it's never said.
Right.
It's alluded to, being this was 62, and even at some point, two of the guys find Ray Milland's daughter out in the woods there by the creek, and they take her off, and it's alluded that they had raped her, even though when you see her, she's laying on the ground crying. She's not dirty. She's not roughed up. She's got a dress on. Her legs are open a little bit, but they're like, the dress isn't ripped, and the mother's reaction to it is what sells it.
Yeah. Well, I think
it was the censors. You can't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way they talk about that is when Ray Milland's character comes back, he walks in and mom and the daughter are sitting there. Mom's holding the daughter and the daughter's crying. And he says what happened. And then, you know, the mom explains that the two guys found her. And he said, did they hurt her? And the mom shakes her head. Yes.
Yeah.
Nods yes.
And this is he's been this hard ass this whole time since this thing started, since the bomb went off. And when he sits down and you see it in his face, mm-hmm. when he sits down and holds his daughter, his baby girl, he just kind of, his shoulders slump down. He softens.
Yeah.
You
he
know?
Never loses it, but
no, he doesn't lose it.
But he softens. That's
a
good word.
He softens and holds his daughter.
Yeah.
That don't last long, though.
No, it doesn't.
Because a second later, well, he comforts her a second, then he gets up and he goes over to pick up the rifle.
Yep.
And he's getting ready to go out. And the wife asks him what he's doing, and the son, Frankie Avalon, says, I'm coming with you, Dad. He doesn't try to stop him. He's like, let's go, come on.
Yeah, he just hands him another gun.
Yeah, and he's going to, as a good friend of the program always says, get shit straight.
Indeed.
And they do.
You know, we should probably note here that for all the times we've talked about how mom doesn't really want to, you know, be violent. How she's totally pacifist. When she hears her daughter scream, she does grab the shotgun or the rifle. I can't remember what she grabbed. Yeah. And, you know, goes looking for
the long gun.
Yeah, and when she sees her and sees the two guys, she actually tries to kill them.
And she said, misses. And she says that to him as he's leaving something about, I tried to kill them.
Yeah, I just wasn't as good a shot as you are, is what she said. Something.
Because later he comes back and he's, you know, because he went and wrecked shop and just shot the guys pretty much point blank, didn't give him a chance. And later on he's sitting there and kind of wrestling with what he did. And at this point she's come around. She's like, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
They, you know.
Well, it's funny because now they've got role reversal.
Yeah.
She is okay and explaining to him that, you know, he's done what he's had to do to take care of his family. And he is now remorseful because he believes that he has become no better than the criminals because he's had to resort to murder and stealing and whatever else in order to take care of the family. So he feels like, much to his dismay, he has completely lost his moral standing and done what he had to do to take care of the family. Now the family's safe, but, you know, at what point do you draw a line and say, okay, I do have to reintegrate back into society at some point?
Yeah.
I know, it's interesting.
Yeah. And also now they backtrack a little bit. When they get in there and they kill the two guys, they're looking through the house and they find the girl whose house it was.
Right.
And they take her in.
And her name is Marilyn. I don't know why I can't remember anybody else's name, but I remember Marilyn.
Well, because Marilyn Monroe, Marilyn Munster.
Yeah, maybe.
And also, let's see, who was the actress? That was Joan Freeman. Yes. Joan Freeman played Marilyn, who was also in the same year, was in Tower of London with Vincent Price. But also, later on, she was Mrs. Jarvis in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. How about that?
Wow.
And just keep going a little aside here. Mary Mitchell, who was the Ray Milland's daughter in the movie, also starred in one of my favorite cult films of all time that we did a podcast on earlier. It was Spider Baby. She's the secretary to Schlocker, the sleazy lawyer. So, and one thing too, that, you know, you find the bomb has dropped here and the mushroom cloud, and when they do get the radio working or the radio comes back online, on the air.
A little early for online.
Yeah. they never say who the enemy is.
True.
They never say where it's come from, but they do say that we are targeting there's some targets, some European targets and some Asian targets that we're retaliating against.
Right.
It's the commies. But they never say it. Which is kind of cool because it just leads you to wonder, you know. But they do go on a little bit, and later on you find a martial law, I guess, has been established. And what's left, because they've hit the enemy that they never speak of, has hit the major cities. It does say on the radio that they've hit, like, what, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia. And one of the coolest lines at the end, which they could have really done more with in the film, you know. But the film was just about this family, not about everything else that was going on. It was just this one family, their little story. But at the end, when they're trying to get back, because Frankie Avalon got shot by the one guy who wasn't at the house. He came back and found him. He got shot in the leg, but it severed an artery. So he's in bad shape. So Ray Milland is like, screw it. We're going. We got it. You know, they've got to get to a doctor or he's going to die. He's going to losing too much blood. And that's his son. And he's going, you know, what he wasn't going to do, get back in the thick of it and drive through all the chaos and all he does. They load up everybody and he's, you know, and you can see it. His face has changed too because, you know, that's my boy.
Yeah, he's got to take care of business.
Yeah, so they they do get a doctor, and he bandages them up a little bit, but he says, you got to get to the aid station or a hospital because I don't have blood.
Yeah,
he needs blood. So they get there, and they finally get stopped on the road by the army guys in the Jeep, and they say, oh, okay, hey, you know, there's an aid station about, what, a mile, 10 miles away.
Yeah, they thought they were going to have to go 60 miles to someplace, but it was only 10 miles to the next aid station.
And they're like, great. And the two army guys have this little exchange, and it's something to the effect of, hey, well, there's five more good ones. The guy says, good ones? He says, yeah, people coming down from the hills, not, you know, closer to the cities, the ones that had suffered the radiation sickness. And, you know, it left me wondering, like, man, what do those people look like? And how bad are they? You know, are they 50s monsters? Are they deranged? Or are they just sick and coughing and dying? You know, or do they mutate? That would have been a kind of a cool thing to go into, but it would have been a different movie and a longer movie.
Yeah.
But the way this ends is really cool because, and I commented this when we were watching it earlier in the week, is the movie, while the credits start playing, and of course the Lex Baxter, the swinging soundtrack is going, the movie is still happening. Yeah, it shows the car driving and shows inside the car and them. And
the credits are just superimposed on top of the
throughout film. The whole ending credits, the movie is still, the story is still unfolding, which it's just them driving.
Yeah, I mean, nothing exciting, but they're still driving.
But it's not just the credits against a black background or a still shot. It's them going. That was kind of cool, I thought.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things, not that, but one of the things that I find interesting about this movie is that they did keep it to a small scale. I mean, you realize that the shit has hit the fan. There are things going on in the rest of the world that you're not seeing, but you know it's happening because they're getting, you know, periodic news broadcasts on the radio.
Yeah. Every 2 hours.
And so you know things are happening, and you know things have deteriorated, and they're trying to, you know, make places for people to go and to reconvene and, you know, join society, as they keep saying, or civilization. But the movie itself just focuses on this family and what they have to do to survive, the things that they go do. And because they chose to go camping out in the wilderness where there isn't anybody, well, next to nobody anyway.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know, they have to make their way on their own. So it's interesting to see a small scale post-apocalyptic version of a movie, as opposed to, you know, most of them, there's these big grand.
Well, especially the ones today with the overblown CGI, over the top, you know, and the big budgets, and it's like, oh, you know, it's a really annoying to me. And this is really refreshing. It's this neat little tight character piece.
Yeah.
You know, of this family, and each one of them has their distinct personality. You know, the father is the, like I said, that typical 50s dad coming into the 60s, and the mother is the happy housewife, and they have that little playful banter, and then the kids are the Frankie Avalon's, the clean cut, you know, dad, you know, he's right there with his dad doing what needs to be done, and the daughter is the teenager, like, oh, this is boring, this is, you know, a little complainy at first, but it, you know, and it starts really quick, too.
It does.
And it starts right at the beginning.
The pacing is pretty fast in this. I was surprised the first time we watched this because, you know, typical for this era, the pacing is not normally as quick as this is. This is paced almost like
soundtrack.
A modern day.
Because of the swinging jazz soundtrack.
Jazz.
Les Baxter set the pace, baby.
That's right. Well, it is. This is paced almost like a modern day film. I mean, it's quick. It keeps going. Lots is happening. That was great grammar. Lots going on.
We don't judge here in the Phantasmo Lounge.
Well, you can't.
No. But, you know, it does. It has it moves along at a good clip, and it's a tight little film. And, hell, I'd recommend anybody watch this. If you like post-apocalyptic films or anything like that.
Even if you don't, watch it.
Even if you don't, yeah.
Because there's not a whole lot of post-apocalyptic going on anyway. You know it's happening.
Yeah, but you don't see a lot. I said, it's just these families, their little story and them getting away from it. And there's some little twists and turns that with some of the other characters that are kind of cool that you kind of don't see coming, which is good. And this is around the same era, I guess, and I might have the dates wrong, but, you know, other ones from this era you've got post-apocalyptic, if I can get that out, Last Man on Earth, which is another kind of a small film. independent, low budget, but it's one guy is the character. And there's one or two others that show up, and of course, the end, if you know you haven't seen it. But I'm talking about the Vincent Price version, Last Man on Earth, not that god-awful Will Smith movie that came out a few years ago. Before Omega Man was Vincent Price, Last Man on Earth. And then there's the Day the World Ended, which is kind of cool, another character piece. Maybe we'll talk about that one later. But another one that we are definitely going to do a podcast about sometime in the near future is The World, the Flesh, and the Devil, which
love
if you have not
movie.
Seen that, check it out. Look it up. Warner Archives has it. You can order it, DVD, I guess, through Amazon. But that is an amazing little film that came in under the radar, and I just found out about it a few years ago. And it's real. And I said, I'm not going to talk any more about it because I got to save that for another podcast.
Yeah. Whatever you got to do, find it. Watch it.
Great film. Another couple of characters, though, in this movie, I meant to say something about in here, Panic in the Year Zero. The two of the young toughs that the ruffians, the rapscallions, the hoodlums that attack the family is Carl. The character of Carl is Richard Bacalion, I guess is how you pronounce his name. This is a cat you have seen in every TV show in the 60s and 70s. He usually playing a bad guy. Sometimes he played a cop. He was in the movie Hots, if anybody remembers that. But he's also in Chinatown. But he's in tons of us. And he's always that Italian and New York guy. And he's always, typically a bad guy. And then the other character, Mickey, was Rex Holman, and I'm watching the movie, and I'm going, God, this young guy looks so familiar, something about his face, and it hit me. He was the guy at the beginning of Star Trek V who's digging all the holes, the bald, really thin old guy digging all the holes in the planet when Cybok comes up and shows him the way. So there's that. So everybody in here, in this movie, pretty much has done other stuff of note. Of course, Ray Milland, Man with X-Ray Eyes and, countless other things. And Frankie Avalon actually did a couple more genre-type pictures. And Mary Mitchell, Spider Baby, like I said. Gina Hagen, all I know her from is Singing in the Rain. I can't stand him with that voice. And you wouldn't recognize that voice in this. Oh, the trailer on this we watched after we watched the movie. And the coolest thing, the trailer has a scene that wasn't in the film. And it's a pretty intense scene. It kind of, doesn't the girl say what happened to her or?
I don't know that she says it explicitly, but then she does comment on, give me a gun, I'm good with a rifle.
Yeah, because in the movie, Ray Milland says something to his wife about, well, maybe I'll take her with me or something. I know she's good with a rifle or something like that. And you wonder, well, how do you know? Okay, maybe it just happened off screen. We didn't see it.
Right.
But in the trailer, when they've gone into the house and they rescue her, that scene was extended. And there's a part where she's kind of manic and says, give me a gun. I'm good with a rifle. I'll kill him. And Randy Land's like, yep, already did it, babe. Didn't you hear the shots? I mean... But check out the trailer. That's probably on YouTube. And I don't know, the film itself might be on YouTube. But it is part of the Midnight Movies double disc set that MGM was putting out. I think with Last Man on Earth is on that disc. That is a great series of movies, those MGM Midnight movies. Tons of good films on there. But seek this one out. Panic in the Year Zero, 1962. Samuel Ziarkov, James Yates Nicholson, and Ray Milland directing. But, you don't usually see a lot of that back then. And he did a good job. It's a tight little film,
It is indeed. There's a few weird little things that, I don't know, I guess you call them bloopers, but goofs. But, the one scene, there's a scene where he throws some gasoline and then lights it on fire. You see this little tiny puddle, and then there's this giant, huge roaring fire. Which was just kind of fun.
Well, that's because the matches back then were better than they are today.
Oh, yeah.
The matches he threw.
That's right. So that was kind of odd. And anytime you see them, he's twiddling the dials on the car radio. The volume's on the left and the tuner's on the right. And it never changes volume, even though he turns it. And sometimes sometimes he's turning the tuner dial and the radio announcer is talking just as clear as day and it's not going in or out. It's just he's talking, but the knob's still turning.
That's like when you see him driving in the background behind him.
Yeah.
It's like not moving and there's like twisting the wheel, or it's turning and they're not really turning it enough, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that in this film, though.
I mean, I didn't notice any, you know, really cool giant goofs or anything, yeah. But the radio thing cracked me up because every time he'd be turning and turning and the radio's just talking away like nothing's going on.
Oh, you know, that's another thing. You brought it up the other night when we were watching it, that, and I'm going to have to go back and watch it and pay attention. Whenever somebody said that, you got him with buckshot. And it, not sure if it was a shotgun or a rifle that Frank
had. I'm pretty sure that he had a rifle in his hand and somehow fired buckshot.
But they supposedly...
I am no gun expert by any means, but as far as I'm aware, that doesn't happen. Craigers will have to correct me if I'm wrong.
But they did have a shotgun somewhere in the trailer.
They did.
Okay. Well, I can't think of anything else that I want to say about this. Can you?
I got nothing. Go watch it.
Yeah, go watch it. Watch this movie. Seek it out. It's very good. Tight little story. I do remember the first time I ever saw it, though. I had this in here real quick. A long, long time ago when I used to stay up late and watch Dr. Mablon on Wavy TV 10, this came on, and I was like, cool, Panic in the Year Zero. Sounds pretty cool. And I was like, wait a minute, there's no monsters in this.
Well, might have been. I was a kid. They were all irradiated, but we never saw them.
I was a kid, you know, but I watched the whole movie. You know, because I wanted to see the Mad Blood parts between the movies.
Did you actually remember the movie?
Vaguely.
Vaguely.
I remember the beginning, and I remember them driving in the car, the family in the car.
Well, they were in the car a lot.
Yeah, and I remember them camping, you know, but I don't remember much else about it until we watched it again. Had no idea how good a movie it was, or is, you know, from the past memories. But yeah, Dr. Mad Blood introduced me to it, so, and, you know... Paying it forward, a few months ago, we showed this at Phantasmo to introduce you know, a bunch more people to it that had never seen it. So hopefully some of them, you know, enjoyed it and have sought it out to own a copy themselves and watched it again. And hopefully, you know, anybody listening to this and hasn't seen it will check it out, too.
So thanks, Dr. Mablood.
Exactly. Always. Thanks, Dr. Mablood. And, you know, coming up on your 40th anniversary this year, come to Monster Fest on October 3rd. Saturday at the Chesapeake Central Library and help us celebrate. Before we sign off here, hey, there's a future podcast coming up. Like I said, we're going to be doing The World, the Flesh, and the Devil soon. I think we're going to get into some 70s TV horror, too. I plan on doing one on Gargoyles, one of my favorite TV movies from the 70s. I loved it as a kid, love it now as a big kid. And, pretty soon we're going to be doing, I know definitely two podcasts that are coming up soon. We're going to be doing one on Kolchak, the Night Stalker, and special guest host on that will be Inspector Craig Eckridge, all the way from the mean streets of Seafield. And we're going to be doing one on the often overlooked Robert Quarry movie, The Death Master, with a special guest host via satellite, or at least by phone, Joe Pocanis, and we will be coming up on those soon in the near future. So keep listening. Let us know if you are listening. Drop us a line on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page or the Phantasmo After Dark email. That's phantasmoad@gmail.com. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Night, everybody.
Night.